Welcome to the Rooted in Change podcast.
Hey everyone, my name is Jan and you're listening to the Rooted in Change podcast. This show features European clean tech champions and their solutions to tackle the climate crisis. Today's guest is Maciej, a board member of Ecobean. Many of us might enjoy our cup of coffee in the morning, but we hardly ever think about what happens to the coffee grounds afterwards. Sure, some might use it for composting or in gardening, but I bet the majority of listeners hasn't given it much thought. Well, Ecobean has. Their idea is to turn the coffee waste into sustainable chemicals. Sounds like a bold undertaking? Well, I agree. Maciej will tell us all about it in just a second. Welcome.
Hi.
My first question is, I read on your LinkedIn profile that you are a former VC that turned operator. Now, that's a, I would say, a rather unusual move. So tell me why and, you know, how did that happen?
I do not actually think that this is such an unusual move. Working in a venture capital from one side is extremely exciting, as you do have this opportunity to meet almost all the time very smart people doing some fantastic projects. So if you are interested in technology, if you have this domain which you love, which you want to explore, and then if you have at the same time the opportunity to work as a VC in that domain, then it's probably the best place. Because myself, I'm very much interested in energy and climate tech. Mm-hmm. So when you have the opportunity to invest, to deploy capital in that area, you really have this feeling that you are on the very frontier of what is happening. So this is very sexy. This is, but at the same time, being an investor for a longer time, at least from my perspective, it kind of makes you feel that you are a bit losing touch. And I think that if you want to be a really good investor, you need to be practical, you need to be pragmatic, you need to give something apart from the capital to the founders and companies you're investing in. And what is the, I actually came from the industry, I came from the heavy industry to the venture capital world. So I was very kind of, practical and had some experience. And then after several years in venture capital, I felt that maybe I'm becoming one of these lunatic VCs, which is just praising some things and not really walking the talk, and that it makes for me that it would just make sense to kind of regain connection with the real world and build stuff myself once again. So this is why the transition. And I feel that that's the. This is happening among startups and VCs that they are moving ships, and I think this is really good because it really allows you to have different perspectives, which is super important.
And I guess what you said before, sort of that a VC is not just there to deploy the capital, but actually realize and also gets his or her hands dirty is what most founders then also really appreciate, right? It's sort of not just the capital is the one part and obviously a very important part in funding startups, but it's the sort of the added benefit of what you can contribute to make the business a success that really makes a difference for the team. So maybe in that sense, also, this is sometimes where you in your former role as a VC felt, well, I could offer and do so much more if it were within the role. And the realm of my role and the scope of my role. So maybe you're right, it's not such an unusual move. But reflecting upon it though, I think most of the times it's founders that have scaled and then exited their company maybe, that then turn VC to go to the other side of the table. But maybe it's also good to have the influx of both sides, that VCs turn operators and operators turn VCs, that really help the ecosystem.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. What I observe is actually that because the case you're mentioning, that the successful founder becomes a VC, is this is the usual path. But actually, I do see lots of examples of such people actually moving once again to becoming an entrepreneur, actually ditching at some point, leaving investing and coming back to building. Everyone has his own idea. I just think that it's really all about having different perspectives and not trying to be smarter than you really are.
Right. And maybe then, just before we get really started on Ecobean, how did you become the VC? So what was your pathway into that role?
So I am a power engineer by education. I spent time working in power companies here in the region in Central Eastern Europe. Moved to a global mining company where I spent time working abroad and working in Chile, Canada. This company also had a private equity arm, which I also was kind of involved in, but that was like my kind of first dipping the toe in the investing. And from that, I moved to venture capital, which is of course, totally different from private equity, but actually, I perceive it as super exciting and super interesting. And then there was an opportunity to join a company which is in energy and doing energy innovation, which, for me was just a brilliant match.
Right. And now finally on Ecobean. So what is it that the company does? I sort of presented the big theme in the intro of turning coffee waste into chemicals, but I'm hoping that you can give me more background.
So what the company is doing is collecting coffee waste from places which produce coffee waste. So think from one point, cafes, petrol stations, office parks, but most importantly from places which produce coffee waste at the industrial scale. So for example, instant coffee facilities. So this is where we do get our feedstock. Then we employ our patented technology, which is like a set of processes, and we end up with today five fractions of chemicals, which are used by various industries. So the thing is that coffee waste is a brilliant resource, and actually, by brewing coffee, you are extracting just a tiny percentage of what's inside, and then a huge amount is still trapped in coffee waste. We believe that this is, it's just suboptimal to leave it to waste and to put it in a landfill. As we have this technology where we are able to valorize 1 ton of coffee waste into, let's say, €8,000. So if you have such a huge value trapped in coffee waste, it really is, worth to get dig into that and to try to get into that value. So yeah, so of course it's not easy, but the team we have is brilliant. Is a fantastic mixture of experienced, gray hair professors working in the industry, and that's from on one side. On the other side, there is the hungry young scientists.
Right.
There is this also what is critical is that we have this deep anchoring at Warsaw University of Technology. So the R&D is top notch, and the company, yeah, today is having this technology, which we are operating at a still relatively small scale, but we are able to fully valorize coffee waste. So basically, we are not leaving anything behind. So we are taking coffee waste as an input, and then at the end, you have these five chemicals, which could be used by, really, and not only could be used, but we have that kind of confirmed commercially that they are of interest. From industries like cosmetics, pharma, food, packaging. But what I think is important is that all of these chemicals we are producing, they have markets. So we are not creating any new market. So from that perspective, this is easier.
Yeah, but it's basically a drop-in solution, right?
It
You're
is. It is.
replacing something that's, I think, where the chemical feedstock, I guess, traditionally is being produced from fossil fuels, and now you're replacing that with your chemicals from the coffee beans.
Exactly. This is a drop-in solution, which kind of means also that the switching costs are relatively small. The chemicals could be mixed with virgin chemicals, so chemicals from the other sources without any impact on the process of our customers. So that's also a good news. But of course, the obvious question is why our customers would be interested in that, because probably they are good with what they have today. So with the chemicals we are delivering, they have a super low carbon footprint because they are derived from waste. They have a very low carbon footprint, which means that effectively our customers are using them to kind of decarbonize their business, or they, you know, of course, in a small fraction. But this is actually a journey where marginal gains actually matter very much. So this is one side, and of course the quality which we offer is very, very high. Usually, they have higher quality than any existing alternatives.
Super interesting, and I want to learn more about that part in just a second. Before we go there, you mentioned the gray hair professors a few minutes back. Is this where the idea originally stems from? Because, you know, in preparing for this interview, and, you know, having my cup of coffee in the morning, it wouldn't strike me to think about, hey, look, I have coffee waste here. You know, the coffee, the grounds that I used are here to make coffee. But then someone must think about, hey, I can turn this into chemicals. So sort of that, there's a disconnect for me. How did that happen? How did you come up with the idea? Because it's not as close as saying, I don't know, I want to drive an electric car and realize it's not being charged fast enough. I develop fast charging solutions to tackle that issue. You know, where's the connect? How did your team end up with the idea?
Yeah. So the whole thing started with Kasper. So Kasper is our co-founder, and actually the one behind the. So he actually kind of drafted the problem. So he was the one noticing the problem. Kasper is a coffee veteran, really spent time in the coffee industry over 20 years, building businesses, selling businesses in the coffee industry, knows, you know, a lot about the business. And at some point he just noticed that, yeah, hey, there is like a no systemic solution to coffee waste. Like the market is growing, they're doing okay, or they're very good, but actually no one is paying attention to what happens with coffee waste. So what can we do? So without, you know, going into solution, he was the one drafting the problem. And he met Marcin, the other co-founder. Marcin was at that time also a very successful entrepreneur and a guy who was spinning out solutions from the academia to industry. So he had this this close connection to academia, to universities, actually, so Kasper went to Marcin to find a solution, but of course there were other ideas at the beginning. So the initial idea was to just make a coffee briquette, like one which you could use in a stove or a barbecue. Which is a very, very simple way to kind of to valorize coffee waste. The next idea was to a very simple one, to use it like as a physical filler when making composites. So like to mix it with some resins and make physical objects out of that, which is also a way to do something with coffee waste, but the best one. So of course, so we didn't start like with this very complex chemical process. There were some first iterations. But these first iterations actually confirmed that there is a market for collecting coffee waste and for coffee waste derived products or substrates. That was very important. And then, of course, we kind of involved the researchers, and thankfully, like the concept of biorefinery, because this is what we are actually in essence doing, is
right.
Not new. So we are not the ones kind of, you know, creating this concept. We kind of, because in other industries are doing that, but on other feedstocks. So we kind of asked ourselves a question, all right? So if it's possible with apple skin or some other, you know, waste, so why don't we try that with coffee? So that was basically more of a research challenge at the beginning. We had this hypothesis that it should be similar, that it you should be able to kind of process coffee waste in a similar manner, and yeah, basically, of course, it wasn't easy, but it took several years. But yeah, but today we have like a sequence of five processes, which prove that you are able to, you know, fully extract value of coffee waste.
Right. And that brings us back to where I put the pause on just a few minutes ago. You said you have five processes, and I guess those then lead to the five chemicals that you're commercializing today. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. So this is a continuous process, although it goes one by one. So there are five processes, and at the end of every one, we produce one fraction, and what is left behind after one process kind of goes as an input to the next one.
Okay, gotcha. And then those five chemicals can be, as you said, delivered to various industries. So anything from cosmetics, packaging, food industry, where they replace chemicals made from traditional feedstocks. And this is, I think, where then the sustainability also comes into full play to say, look, we're using a waste product ultimately, and now turning it into the same input that you would use traditionally. So from a sort of circularity point of view, this is highly valuable and highly beneficial to your manufacturing processes.
Yeah, exactly. That's the USP, at least a strong part of it. Of course, just to be precise, we are not only competing kind of with virgin materials or materials derived from non-renewable sources, because we are also competing with substrates made out of a biological resources. For example, when talking about PLA, so polylactic acid. Which is one of our products, and which is today the industry standard is to produce it from corn starch, so which is of course a bio resource. But then also the thing is that here we also do have this upper hand when comparing the carbon footprint of our PLA and the PLA derived from corn starch. This is, of course, it is not a rule, but usually when you are starting with waste as your feedstock, you really have like this handicap, and you really have this good starting point when calculating your carbon footprint. It just kind of is a probably one of the main principles of circular economy. If the something is already made and it's kind of is waste is either to be wasted or be to convert it into something else, it is and you are able to convert it in an efficient manner and also economically feasible, yeah, you probably try and should do that. So we are going that path. But on the other side, of course, we are an alternative to substrate derived from non-renewable resources.
Gotcha. And you mentioned that, that was one of your USPs. So if you were to pitch this, or if you were to pitch Ecobean at an event, what would you say are the USPs of your company in a nutshell?
Yeah, this is a, of course, tricky one, and because they it really depends on to whom we are talking. But they from one side, because this business is I'm usually saying that this business has a upstream part where we collect coffee waste and the downstream part, and in both and this actually
Which brings us back also to the analogy of the refinery, right? Which is
exactly.
ultimately, because you're located right at the center of, well, if you were to look at a traditional oil business, of the upstream part is drilling up there, all the downstream part is selling it. It very similar to your case, only that it's coffee grounds and you're working in a circular business.
Exactly. But and putting that and using that analogy, basically there are at least these two groups of entities to whom we should appeal. So one, our upstream partners, so the ones from whom we could collect coffee waste. So what could we offer to these guys? That's what's the alternative? So that's one message. The second message is downstream, so the companies to whom we are delivering sustainable chemicals, and what can we deliver to these guys? So to our downstream customers, we are delivering high quality sustainable chemicals with the lowest carbon footprint possible. Like, we have this kind of calculated, verified by a third party. We are quite certain that there is nothing better on the market. And then we are very price competitive, and we are very high on quality. So, it should be a at least a conversation starter.
Right.
And on the upstream part, there are of course different actors in this upstream part. But what we can pitch here is that we either can expand your business, so actually do something with a part of your business which currently is waste and which currently costs you money, or best case is you are just you are the costs are covering the revenue. But we can add a puzzle to your existing business so that you can expand and you can make money somewhere else. So this is probably part of the story we are giving to instant coffee manufacturers. But yeah, we can co-locate our factory close to your factory. It can work that way. And also we can track what happens with this carbon, with this coffee waste of yours. And also we can somehow share the carbon credits which we as a company are generating. So this is the story.
Gotcha. And I guess especially for the upstream part, that's really interesting because before that was probably waste that they ultimately paid for to be taken care of. And now you're coming and say, look, we're making a business out of it, and this is an opportunity for you rather than the problem. So that's really interesting.
To part of them, yes. To part of them, that was the case. So that was a cost for them, or is a cost for them. But there is also a large group in the coffee industry which is using coffee waste within the production scheme, and they are incinerating coffee waste and generating heat out of that. So they are using it in a pro in the processing. We really not feel, but we know that actually incinerating waste is once again a suboptimal way of dealing with it.
It doesn't provide the most value out of, the resources that are still being
Exactly,
left.
exactly.
On the so I have a follow-up question then on the downstream part. Is that a question mostly on price? Because from previous conversations, especially sort of in the whenever ultimately I guess it's a drop-in solution, and you say, look, our product is the same in simplest terms as the one that you're using right now, then it's not a question of right. It comes with added benefits, and some especially because it's a it might have the sustainability credentials, yes, but apart from that, they're looking at chemical A and chemical B. They're the same formula. So if one costs a whole lot more than the other, is that the conversations that you need to tackle? I mean, you also said that you are price competitive, so which is great. But how does that play out from your perspective and from the reality that you see every day?
My colleagues on the board, Marcin, Kasper, myself, we are all entrepreneurs, and we knew like from day zero that this has to work economically. Like it has to work as a business. So economic principles apply, and you cannot build anything around a premise that some sort of a green premium or sustainability advantage will save you. It just has to defend itself on a standard market basis, which kind of goes into which translates into the fact that we always knew that it has to be price competitive, meaning at least it has to be on par, which is currently quoted by the market, or cheaper, because as you say, these large companies, they although this is a drop-in solution, it always is associated, switching is always associated with a risk, because there is a third-party risk, or there is this partner risk, let's say. So we are a small company. We are unproven. So something bad might happen to us. We haven't produced it at scale yet. So lots and lots of risks, which they will be discounting, and they will be kind of trying to quote. So it just has to economically it has to defend itself. Of course, this sustainability aspect is very, very important, and we hope it gains even more importance. But at the end of the day, at least in the current state of the market, and at least from what we are learning today when having these commercial discussions with customers, you need to be price competitive, and you need to deliver, and you need to have very high quality. And if on top of that you have some sort of a sustainability advantage, then probably we can start the conversation. So I think that if maybe it will change because it's different from reading a report and reading how companies are claiming that their sustainability is important for them, and then real life comes into play. And at least that's our experience, that in like a standard normal commercial negotiations, sustainability is of secondary importance, which we hope will change. But that's not the case, at least now.
Yeah, it's interesting that it sort of comes in almost waves, I would say, that, for example, before the war in Ukraine started and before sort of inflation was high, people focused a lot on sustainability and sort of making the switch to more sustainable solutions. And out of a sudden, as with rising costs and, energy costs and so on, the as profitability is under pressure and the core business becomes more important again, those sustainability concerns become secondary again. So I think the way you phrased is absolutely right, that you need to start envisioning the business that it works without a green premium, because if you discount for that green premium, if then your business case disappears, that's going to be tough going forward. Or in bolder terms, you're not going to be able to sustain your business then. But if you turn the opposite way around and say, look, our products are price competitive or potentially cheaper than the existing solutions, and then they come even with a green premium, that's going to be a conversation then that's going to open a few doors. And then with the hopefully the wave and the pendulum swinging in the opposite direction, that sustainability will be more important in the upcoming years again, that's going to be a hopefully a smoother ride for you then.
Yeah, exactly. So in our business model, we are calculating this, let's say, upside from our positive impact, or our positive sustainable impact. But this is once again an upside. So this is something which we are explicitly stating that this is something which might work or not necessarily. And yeah, as you say. This definitely comes in waves, and right now we are in a period when everyone's looking at margins, and it's tough. But yeah, if you have a technology which is innovative, and yeah, it should work.
Then maybe on that commercial journey, how far have you come? You said earlier that you were still a relatively small team. So maybe just give our listeners a bit of insight of, how much traction do you have? Where are you on your commercial journey?
Yeah, so approximately 25 people on board, and additional external advisors. So, but yeah, but 25 people more or less working every day on Echo Bean. So, coming back to the terminology which we already used. So on the upstream, we are quite advanced because we have several customers we are servicing. This part of the solution, so collection, reporting, calculating CO2. This is something which we are doing for 2, 3, 4 years already. At scale, we are every year probably close to 50 tons of coffee waste. This is how much we are collecting. So this is something which we are relatively confident about. And this is something which I think I can confidently say we checked at scale. So that part is. This is something which we initially, before the logistics and the collection feedstock, this would be the tricky part. It's not. So this is something which we already know how to do. But on the downstream, so the production of sustainable chemicals, this is something where we are just right now starting our first commercial cooperations on still very small scale. So let's say single order of maybe 100 kilograms. But this is due to the fact that we do not have like a capacity to produce more. And this kind of brings me to what we are working on right now. What is for us the key thing right now is to develop and deploy our demo plant. So this business, so chemical business, as similar to other businesses, requires scale to have these professional conversations with off-takers. They will always ask for how repeatable you are, how much can you deliver, and before they will take any decision, they will ask you to for this 6 month period of kind of testing and sending samples, and you need to be able to send them, at a large volumes. So this is something which we cannot do today, and this is why we are building this demo line of ours. We are calling it Ecobee Technology Center, and yeah, it will be a springboard for us to before deploying these large mega refineries, how we are calling our large facilities.
Right, and what's the timeline on your next step?
If everything goes really, really well, and if everything works, because we are somehow advanced in the process, but if everything works really, 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 really well, Q4 next year, so Q4 2025, we might slowly start the operation over there.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Oh,
We've
thank you.
been, a year back on this podcast, we had Pete from Deep Branch on the show, who is building also a similar tech for alternative proteins. You could say, the also a biorefinery of some sort. And he explained quite vividly sort of everything that could go wrong and what went wrong in sort of the process of building. And it's not an easy undertaking, and sometimes there are sort of unforeseen risks where you say, right now, everything could go according to plan, then next year great, but sometimes life also comes into play. So I'm hoping for the best, fingers crossed. It's just a cross-reference when you said earlier, hopefully everything goes according to plan, that episode just popped up.
Yeah, as you say, we are doing our best to and trying to mitigate.
And that's all you can do, right?
That's all we can do. So of course we did. There are some risks which we identified, and these we are trying to mitigate. And there is a bunch of risks which we haven't identified, and most likely they will materialize. But yeah, there are ways which now you can actually increase the probability of its of success. We feel that the best ways is to just to surround yourself with people who did that in the past. That's probably, I don't know, but we feel that this is a very very important to surround yourself with people who went for something similar in the past. And yeah, so wherever and whenever possible, we are doing just that.
Right. I mean, yeah, again, that's sort of the only thing that you can do, and then hopefully no unknown unknowns hit you. Fingers crossed for that. Looking maybe at the slightly wider scale, because you said the ultimate game plan are the mega refineries. So sort of what are the plans for the next 3 to 5 years? Then you mentioned, ideally Q4 next year you have the pilot up and running and operational. That's a year and a bit f from now. 3 years to 5 years from now, what's Ecobee like, and what does the company look like?
Yeah, so in 3 years from now, we definitely are running at least one mega refinery. Most likely it will be in Germany. Germany is the largest market, largest coffee market also in Europe. So we do have some partners there already interested in doing such a partnership with us. So yeah, for us, a mega refinery is a plant with capacity of at least 10,000 tons of coffee waste able, which is able to process. Our goal is actually to start a bit higher in Germany and to have a plant able to process 20,000 tons coffee waste annually. And this likely will be the market where we will start. And yeah, and of course we. Good thing is that we, if everything at the demo line, at the pilot scale is proven, then the mega refineries should be a bit easier. From the scaling up perspective, we are kind of not we are not doing anything crazy. So the laboratory which we are running right now has certain capacity, and the demo plant will have certain capacity, and the scale up factor between these two is still very, very reasonable. So we are kind of also mitigating this risk, because this is very, very often when things break when you are scaling up.
When you sort of go from, one to 10,000, all of a sudden you realize the same logics don't apply anymore.
Absolutely.
That risk is then not being taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is something which we really took a lot of time to consider and to calculate how much we want to really have, like what is the optimal like step in between. So what is the optimal size of this Ecobee Technology Center if our ultimately the mega refineries will be somewhere between 10 to 40,000 tons of coffee waste annually. Talking about internationalization and different markets, so we are taking into account several things. For us, of course, Europe is where we want to start, as this is a natural market for us. But what is also important from us, apart from the size of the market, which I mentioned, like that, which is advantage when talking about Germany. But also, what really is important is the partnerships and the connections we have on a particular market, because for example, this is a waste business, so waste businesses have their own like characteristic. So you want to have a partners which know how to navigate the legal framework when talking about waste businesses in any particular jurisdiction. You want to have partners which can probably manage the whole process like in a complex manner, who did that in the past. So it's all about also mobilizing entities and people in particular markets. And we do have already such partners. I think that most likely we will also be quite early in Finland, which is per capita, which is that this is the country with the first the number one in coffee consumption, and
Dark
somewhere
nights
exactly
need a lot of
exactly
coffee.
exactly so Finland will be also somewhere one of our first steps, and also either Portugal or Spain, as this is also a very, very developed market coffee wise and we already have very cool partners over there.
Gotcha. Really exciting, and it's interesting to see how, at least then in Europe, local coffee consumption is really a key driver for your business as well. I think that's sort of a nice thing to reflect about. And yeah, well, sort of a fun part that you don't get to see that often in the climate tech space, that something as sort of so normal as drinking coffee has really strong implications on where you're going with your business. That's, yeah, I find that amusing.
Yeah, it's a we are I'm always saying that we are closer to be a chemical business than to be a coffee business. Of course, we are like very specific in this feedstock, which is coffee waste, but yeah.
You're not in the coffee space. You could, if it weren't for the coffee waste, you're the, really, as you say, a chemicals and ingredients company. But you need that feedstock in order for your processes to work.
Exactly.
In the beginning, we started sort of with your personal journey, and I want to bring us back to that. I find it always interesting in these conversations to understand the motivation of the people that I'm talking to. What keeps you going? So I would love to hear from you. What is it that keeps you going? It makes you get up in the morning, potentially have your cup of coffee in order also to fuel your business success. Not sure if that's part of what you think about in the morning when you have a cup of coffee, but what is it that drives you?
Maybe it's very simple, or maybe it's very philosophical, but I think that we really, as Europeans here on the continent, we really need to work very heavily and strongly to kind of reindustrialize and to make sure that we are building stuff here, that we are doing things here, that we are using our intellectual potential here. Because I think the last years and the data proves that Europe is kind of stalling, like when it comes to building and innovating. So if I can have even a tiny part of my contribution to a technology which is a technology actually which could be applied globally, and could be somehow exported from the from Europe, yeah, so this is something which kind of drives me. I really do not want to Europe to be as dependent as it already is, for example, on energy resources from, you know, various directions. So if there is a small part which we can do, which I can do, yeah, so this is exactly it. So,
and I guess
yeah.
On the chemical feedstocks, it's very similar, right? If you think about sort of the normal production processes, in terms of where, I guess, I would assume the majority of chemicals are being produced from fossil fuels, thereby you need natural gas and oil.
Yeah,
you know, and those are to a large extent not being produced in Europe, and the refineries are to a large extent not in Europe. So if we were to look at the global picture again, yeah, you know, once more Europe is quite dependent on other sources.
Exactly. So of course, you know, to a tiny extent, but ECOWIN is kind of and will be like strengthening the resilience of Europe as an economy. So so this is exactly what I feel European technologists should be focused on. So this is exactly that. I'm truly convinced that we need to work very, very hard to remain competitive and not to you know, become like some are already saying that Europe is like a museum already and nothing apart from regulation, nothing happens here. So yeah, anything which kind of proves this wrong is worth doing.
I think that's a very motivating end to this podcast episode. Let's work together to rewrite that history, make sure that Europe is not seen as a museum, but rather as a powerhouse of clean innovation that could also be a good story, especially in the climate tech sector, to be told globally.
Fully agree.
Matti, thank you so much for making the time today. It was lovely to learn more about your personal journey, but also ECOWIN, and fingers crossed for scaling up the tech and looking forward to seeing you succeed. I'll think of you when I'll have my cup of coffee in the morning.
Thank you. Thank you. A pleasure. and thank you for the invitation.
All the best. Bye.